and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising.
Hey listeners, it's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue is the end-to-end solution for insight, outreach, and analytics for higher ed advancement and stewardship teams around the world. Recently, we launched Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub, where subscribers have access to over 100 hours of free, on-demand original series and podcasts, all created with fundraisers in mind. We're thrilled to feature the Development Debrief on Evertrue Studios podcast network. Check us out at evertrue.com/studios.
This week, our guest Deb shares her perspective as a corporate and foundation relations professional. In the second episode on this topic, we compare it to individual giving and learn more about how the space is unique. Deborah Lynn is the Director of Corporate, Foundation, and Association Relations at Stanford Medicine, leading the team closing and facilitating organizational philanthropic support to the School of Medicine and Stanford Healthcare. She has built over a decade of experience in academic research, fundraising, and programmatic strategy and operations. Before Stanford University, Deborah was the Associate Director of Corporate Relations at UCLA Engineering, spearheading engagement with partnerships for the school with industries such as tech, aerospace, and energy. She was a founding team member of Partnership UCLA, a department that engages alumni in helping student career development, creating and launching campus-wide programs supporting the thousands of students' professional and academic development. In addition to academia, she has also worked in the media and tech industries. Before UCLA, Deborah worked in the television and film industry for companies such as Disney ABC Studios and 20th Century Fox, managing global marketing partnerships, production, talent management, and television comedy development. Now let's get started. Hi, Deb. Welcome to the Debrief.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. Looking forward to a good conversation.
Yeah, so I know that your experience in the private sector has really informed who you are as a professional and has been a big part of the lens and the framework that you bring to CFR at Stanford. So maybe you could speak a little bit about that.
So, you know, first off, in terms of my current role, and probably the last 11, 12 years, I've been in higher education, more or less, although in different fields. And so prior to higher education, I spent about 5-6 years in the entertainment and media industry, working for Fortune 500 companies like Fox and actually, for the most part, Disney, but also worked in some smaller companies, talent management. And then in between my current institution, Stanford Medicine, and my prior institution, UCLA, I worked also at a tech startup. And so I really cut my teeth, you know, my most formative early career years, developing my own kind of professional style. How do you navigate internal teams? How do you get more resources? How do you make a case for kind of moving an initiative forward, especially in the entertainment field, which is very high risk, high reward? I think that has been really important, where when you feel like things are always at stake and you have to be very quick on making decisions, but also navigating a corporate environment. How do people communicate and build alliances and all that? And so that was really formative and really important, you know, early years, where I would say in those years, you know, my personal life, there was a little less at stake, right? I wasn't married. I only had to kind of focus on building those skills. And I think those are really important in any field, but definitely in corporate foundation relations, where you're constantly, especially now, as it continues to evolve to even more complexity, you have to basically be able to think on your feet quickly and go with like the internal dynamics and culture of your institution. Don't just go rogue, but have that sort of scrappy mentality is really, really important versus, you know, waiting for someone to make a decision for you or waiting for your higher ups coming up with ideas, pitching them. Things die quickly at entertainment. You know, there are shows I worked on that only lasted one or two episodes before they got pulled from the TV screen. And so you just have to move on. okay, that didn't work well, let's assess, and then let's go. And always have like 20 different things in the pipeline so that you have content that's ready to go. So that was a very long answer. Hopefully, and feel free to ask more questions or I can
Yeah.
elaborate.
What's an example of a time where you've had to think quick on your feet with CFR? Because for at least from where I sit, it seems like it moves so slowly because there are so many players and there are so many steps. So it's interesting to hear you say that.
And then we buckets TFR. So the team I manage and have the privilege of being the director of now, it's CFAR, right? But not all teams have that. So it's corporate, foundation, and association relations. And that's because this third category kind of is a catch-all for all the things that don't neatly fall into the first two. My first full-time kind of CFAR type role was actually in engineering at UCLA in the dean's office with Brandon Baker, another guest. And
Nice.
corporate relations moves much faster, right? If you think about how companies make decisions, yeah, they also have hierarchy and bureaucracy and all these things. But then once you have the push, basically, if you don't expend that budget often, you might not be able to do it. So I think for that one, corporate relations does skew much faster. Now, I agree. On the foundation side, it does go much slower, right? There's usually a process and very detailed expectations and that sort of thing. For example, right before even calendar year end, we had a corporate funder wanting to give, a six-figure gift to one of our programs. We had no idea about it, but like if we didn't close it and get all the right signatures and all that stuff lined up internally and set, we could have potentially lost that funding. Now, I've actually never had someone give me a deadline and it went, blew past it and the money goes away. So I always assure my gift officers, at least we always have to focus on bringing in things the right way, especially like an institution like Stanford. We have to be very meticulous about it. But we had to move quickly, right? So I think me knowing the background of the program and how they work was really helpful. So I didn't have to go through all those checkboxes. And then the fact that there was no proposal made it helpful. When you add a lot of components that have been shared with a funder instead of expectations, then you have to sort of untie and unravel those. And then all the internal approvals, right? Pulling all together the right folks quickly, utilizing a meeting we had about something else, but tacking it on quickly was able to help us push through. So oftentimes, maybe the funding takes a while to close, but every single step of the way, I really encourage my team to act quickly. Be thoughtful about it, but like make a decision. We can always pivot, but holding off and staying in analysis paralysis doesn't help anyone really. It just delays the process and then it frustrates faculty, it frustrates the funder. And so oftentimes with CFAR work, you're not dealing with just one person on the other side. You're dealing with whole teams. You're dealing with whole teams internally. And so you have to act quickly, even if like the whole machine might turn very slowly, right? I think of like Titanic, like to turn a boat versus turning a canoe. Like a boat, you have to get all the crew on board and coordinated to move that ship.
In addition to the decisiveness, the precision, the speed, what are other things you look for when you're considering hiring someone, especially someone who, like you said, might be wanting to move into this work for the first time and making a career shift?
I've been hiring on my team. I actually just finished hiring another backfill role. I really appreciate folks with varied experiences. So for me, it's always a really good sign not to be a job hopper necessarily, but if you've tried a couple things, right? I can see that you've moved into different environments with different cultures and continue to grow your skill set. And so I like having people from outside higher ed. Because like a lot of the higher ed pieces, I feel like I can train, but I look at least depends on the place, right? When I worked at the startup, having maybe not startup experience, but maybe work in an industry that was really fast paced, like media, okay, I can take that, right? For the roles on my team currently, we're a very lean team. We have a great impact. I'm really proud of my team, but we need someone who's a self-starter and who's used to doing that. Great customer service skills. I mean, this goes actually back to when I was managing student staff at UCLA and prior to my engineering role working in the college. I really loved hiring junior staff, right out of college or even in college as a student staff worker who had Starbucks experience. That was my first job, actually. I worked at Starbucks when I was 16. And I think a lot of those life skills are around how do you handle a person who's upset or maybe really demanding, right? People can get like feisty when they need their coffee, right? And so can maybe like you don't know how to do like the name of this program or this, but if you can like diffuse a situation, you can take the emotion out of it, but still be empathetic and engage. Like those are things that I think can be learned, but it's really hard for a manager to train, right? And so I think for early career talent, obviously for ones who are much more senior in their career, I really look for someone who can kind of really in a skillful way navigate that at like more higher level organizations and leadership. So yeah, that varied experience, that self-starter attitude, examples of that self-starter attitude. I get very deep in my interviews, much almost like a tech interview. It's great that you collaborated with someone, but I'll actually go and give me an example. Okay, what was the first step? Why did you choose that step? Who did you involve? Why did you choose those people? Okay, the next step. Like really get very granular to really understand how you think through different challenges and navigate that. I think that problem solving, like any role, but especially in this role, is really key.
So a lot of the things you described are things that I'm looking for in a gift officer position. So what makes a CFR gift officer different from an alumni or a parent gift officer?
I would say the core skills in terms of soft skills are probably pretty similar. I think the
Okay.
difference is what you like around the actual kind of mechanics of fundraising. So C4 funding, you're more of an expert than I am on the individual side, but C4 funding, I always think of as people who really enjoy systems. Some funding is going to come through or soliciting funding. I often have to think about, at least on a corporate side, less so on the foundation, how do I get the decision made that they'll approve this? So I'm like, okay, so I have and then there's a lot of analysis, right? Oh, I might be talking to the R&D team. And maybe that the budget comes from them, maybe, but they actually have to convince the university relations team that has like a supplemental budget, and they have to convince this. So I'm all actually piecing together the map on the other side on how they get the decisions makers. And on our side, because we work so closely with sponsored research and all these other offices that touch corporate foundation funding, but bring in the funding into a different category, we also have to align the folks on our side too. So oftentimes we're thinking about how to get different people coordinated and then on the same page. And even just this week, I was at a UIDP Bay Area forum, right? Which is a place for not only CFAR officers, but like tech licensing and contracts. A CFAR officer needs to be somewhat versed in all these things around intellectual property ramifications, diligence, what's a service agreement? How is that different in looking at a gift agreement versus what is a contract and what you can include that and what stipulations are allowed? So I think a lot of my education in my early CFAR days was around kind of the legal aspect and being really comfortable talking to another, like a legal leader or a business development leader on the other side, maybe not knowing every single little piece that we lean on our legal team for, but being able to do pretty much the bulk of it at the beginning. And so if you like that, right, then that's a good fit. I don't, and maybe you can speak to the individual side. I just don't get the sense that that's as big of a part of a piece that you're thinking at the forefront always when individual getting.
Yeah, I think that's right. Definitely.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us some context? You've referenced your team. You said that it's lean. How many people is it, and how many dollars are brought from CFR on average year over year? And where are you guys within the organization at Stanford?
So right now I have a team, or technically a group of seven. We're a small team, I would say, within the Stanford Medicine umbrella and Medical Center Development. In terms of dollars, I probably wouldn't share this over a podcast, but in terms of, I can just talk about percents. And Percentage-wise, it's about a third that comes in.
Wow.
So, right. Or and then it kind of fluctuates a little bit less, maybe closer up to 40%, depending on the year. I do have this, and so it is a large portion. However, I also am very much about owning what we own and own, and then not owning what we don't own. And so I'll just say, does my team touch every single piece of funding? No. That's just impossible. But we are fully responsible for triaging, for facilitating, and troubleshooting a lot of the different challenges and complexities, and also the strategy around bringing in more funding and meeting those numbers. And what's different about Stanford, although I think it's fairly common in some institutions, but not so much in others, depends on how you work it out. We count sponsored research into our numbers, right? But not all sponsored research, some sponsored research. And that's because it's actually trending that a lot of, and this is well known in the CFR field, a lot of funding is becoming more and more sponsored research. So a lot of the big foundations, like what you think about, especially in the health, right? So I focus on medicine, School of Medicine, and adult hospital. I have lovely counterparts who lead this effort on the children's hospital side for Stanford. But a lot of like Gates Foundation, all these folks, the parameters when they give to a university are is charitable, but also is sponsored research, right? It is considered charitable even if they have more detailed expectations. So we do count that into our numbers, and we also work on that support too. It's not purely in the gift realm on my end.
So, how do you go about increasing the funding? Do you parse things out? Do you think about specific foundations? How does that look?
Yeah, I think right now, since the team's been really understaffed and I'm just staffing up and onboarding, I'm focused on mostly maintaining. Of course, we have all these things come up internally where we have to run after certain things, prep for certain solicitations. But I do acknowledge that, we're somewhere in a privileged place where we do get so much inbound, and a lot of times it is making sure we're navigating it, bringing it in, but making sure we're navigating it in an appropriate fashion, right? And making sure we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But yes, I think my experience at UCLA during the Centennial campaign, which I know Brandon Baker also referenced in his episode, it was a lot of boots on the ground, developing new relationships and increasing a pipeline. I want to do that too in my team, right? I think it's always good to obviously cultivate the current relationships you have. And I think with CFAR funders, right, it's not an individual, that those relationships change all the time. You may have a new CEO, new vice president. They may get rid of their university relations team, and now it's like, who do you go to, right? You have to figure that out. It's not clear who your go-to person is or people, and that can shift constantly. And so that's one effort, right? Always making sure, and we can try to maintain that. And then the other piece is, how do we explore new channels, right? And so we are very tech heavy in the Bay Area. A lot of great companies have been created and spun out of the university itself, but also with our graduates. So we do have a very kind of rich pool of folks, but I would love to explore other industries as well, or think differently about, which foundations, which organizations we can be engaging. So that's probably the next step right now. Currently with my team, it's really about establishing the current newer team members, but I think that's the next goal, is to not only maintain and cultivate and grow the current pool, but really push for the next expansion. So to develop and continue developing a healthy pipeline.
Yeah. Do you think that CFR has visibility issues in the field?
I do. I do. And I think that's un I mean, I think it's fortunate or unfortunate, right? I think it's opportunity. And some teams and some organizations are still set up this way, whether maybe they just don't like they don't have the resources, maybe they have different priorities. So like everyone does their own thing, that's totally fine. But what I have observed is that it's often, seen as like a one-off in the past, or like maybe an individual officer might take on some of it as like a supplemental piece versus a dedicated role. And it is a very different way of thinking of a funder. The way I talk to a company is very much thinking through how is aligned with their business needs, because that's what they're thinking of. Yes, they may have a charitable support. Maybe it's a very wealthy and very large company, public, they're doing super well. They might have that, but if you look at during economic downturns, usually those units are the one of the first to be cut down, right? And less resourced. And so you always have to think about what is mission critical for the company or the foundation, what is really core to them. So I find that interesting. For someone in C4, I always have to read the business news and what's going on with the markets. Like I track on that because that does affect how I talk about the case for support internally. So I think there's something about like the visibility of C4 of like and how rich this field can be, but also just even talking about Stanford, how much it's grown to be, in terms of portion wise to how we think about funding as a whole, right? And I think a lot of like the other categories, like sponsored research and stuff, are now becoming more and more integrated. And so if you're someone, or I mean, for me, I never say never, but I just have a hard time believing I'd ever step out of this field while I'm, in this fundraising kind of career, because I really love the complexity. Like I love getting like the gnarliest problem and like working through that and seeing how all the pieces connect together. Maybe the previous way where just like, oh, companies just give and that's straightforward and it sometimes sticks around, that I'm sometimes puzzled by, but that's absolutely not the case now. At least not at Stanford, and not at my prior institution, which are both R1 universities, but pretty different, right? Public, private, even the size of the student base, even the sort of the orientation around, the types of students. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Yeah,
Who
go
are
ahead.
your biggest partners as you're detangling those knots?
Oftentimes, and I always say this, like we sit in development. It was the same when I was at UCLA. We sit in development, and I'm still very good friends, at least at UCLA, with like all my colleagues who are, individual giving, stewardship, all that stuff. But on the day-to-day, I was talking to sponsored research, right? The most. And this was a unit that sat very like far from development. We work closely, but there was no sort of reporting lines or even a regular cadence of meetings. So it was sort of like me and my colleague, like one-off kind of reaching out to them and just developing a relationship. Nowadays, it's pretty much the same at my current job, sponsored research, the contracts office. Yes, of course, my internal colleagues, we have to partner quite a bit because, I really lean on them to share with me what the faculty are doing. We serve all faculty, my team, our team. But there are so many more individual gift officers that have more recent touch points with them than we do. And so, yeah, I think on the day-to-day, it's more like I would say like 60-40, and the 60 is all these other offices that touch corporate foundation funding, as well as my counterparts in the other units, right? So I sit with medicine, there's counterparts in engineering and the central university side, and then probably 40% is internally where you're navigating these intricacies with the faculty.
So I know you said things are getting more and more intertwined, and I totally, at least from where I sit, I've seen the same thing where donors and funders are trying to tackle big problems and they're asking big questions. And so it makes sense that it's all blending. But what changes, if any, have you seen since the fall, and how much do world issues impact corporate funding, if at all?
You mean since the fall, so very recently, right? And I can, I feel like I can say this. Like both our institutions, are going through challenges, right?
I
So,
think all
I think,
institutions are.
yeah, but I think that I can say, yeah, so I can, I mean, I can speak to mine, and then I know yours. I think there's a big climate around, like questioning the higher ed piece, and there's just generally more scrutiny to, of course, all universities, but especially, private universities. And so I think with CFAR funding, the way that, I'm thinking about it, it doesn't change the way we work, but I do think kind of with the current climate, I'm even more so mindful about how we conduct our work to make sure, we're crossing our T's, dotting our I's, that sort of thing, and making sure there's alignment and coordination, right? I think it's sometimes challenging when you're, working in a university where there can be silos like any other large organization. But yeah, with CFAR funding, like because oftentimes some of the biggest challenges is coordinating with these other offices that talk to companies and foundations, we have to be even more coordinated, right? So that communication, that cadence, developing those alliances where we don't all report up to the same unit. So we have to make sure, we are on the same page and present a well thought out, a united front. I didn't have a corporate funding recently that shifted, but there was like a foundation funding because of events last year, one of many, right? There's so many that changed their direction to another piece, and they asked for a much larger proposal and then ended up funding one specific thing after something happened, and you just have to pivot, right? And it is very, very much funder specific, and the amount was lower than we expected, right? It was still wonderful, great support, but I can see much more thoughtfulness on the funder side, not just corporate but foundations too, and also just corporate foundations, right? Of like where the money's going. It's always been the case, but I think that additional, it's not scrutiny, it's just more of this sort of carefulness on that spending being spent the way they want it is even kind of more attuned than before, I would say. I'm wondering for you too on the individual side if you're seeing that too.
Yeah, I think people are reprioritizing constantly. But once someone lowers their funding, like the example you were citing, or stops their funding, is it really hard to get them back the next year or, back up in their dollars? How does that work?
I think it depends, right? So, and that's not a straightforward answer, but that's always our world. At least it always depends. It's always case by case. With foundation funding, I can see it being more of a challenge because foundation funding is almost more like individual funding. It usually starts with a family or an individual, and there's more of a personal tie usually. So if a foundation drops off or changes their priorities, depends if it's like a personal or professional foundation. My team only covers professional foundations, and that's also loosely defined, right? Like everyone defines it differently. I think with professional foundations, as long as you're aligning with their priorities, the faculty relationships are there, we can reinvigorate that. But if it's because of a personal tie and then the personal tie has gone away or changed, then that's much harder. I'm not worried about companies. Companies, drop off funding all the time. They also come back out of the blue. It's always about their business goals. I had a situation, I've shared this with my team before, when I was in my old role at UCLA, where we had a consistent funder and who gave to student programs. And then in the meeting, they said, we want to give, but the university has divested away from this category, and they happen to sit in this category, and so I can't make a case to my CEO to continue giving unless that changes. And what do you do in that situation, right? Someone in our role is not making those decisions on behalf of the university. And so we were like, okay, we can provide more information, but we really have no, you know, like no pull on that. That is like a much higher level. However, we get it. Like you need to make a case, you know, and we focused on, you know, the student support, you know, really getting, and that was really aligned with their sort of philanthropic goals. But, you know, he came back later on and he said, we're not giving, right? Because like that was, and that was fine. And then a couple of years right. later, they came back because the new leadership shifted and said, you know, actually we really want to. So we don't, you know, you can't take it personally. Like it's one of those things. And then for like a larger company, like a big tech company, they have the way their funding works is like, they usually have their own pocket. So if it's not this team, it's probably another team that we can go to, right? As long as it's aligned with their priorities. And so, yeah, I think corporate funding is a little more dynamic. Professional foundation funding can be a little more dynamic. You just have to find like the right nugget based on where they're going and align your strategy to that, right? So, which is probably a little bit different than individual giving, where I'm sure there's a strategy, but also, you know, they have their own sort of personal pieces that can be touched on that maybe you can pull on or maybe kind of shift depending on your personal relationship as a gift officer with them.
Do you have any plans for using AI in the future?
I'd love to use AI. I mean, I think it's exciting. And I also, all my fundraising and when I was in engineering role was all AI. There's a lot of AI and medicine activity here too at Stanford. Although I think that's really more owned by lots of our central teams right now, but it is a great, it is the next frontier, right? And it's already here. Like it's, I kind of think of it as like the computer and we're still in typewriters. It's already here. You either like jump on board now or you jump on board later. And we have a great faculty member who, does like AI research and said that based on their studies, they did like a lot of those like phone, like those call centers and like, what did AI do? And a lot of like implementing AI was using it to get rid of like the most time consuming menial tasks. And then the human can kind of focus on the more advanced tasks. So I love seeing it that way for the team.
And last but not least, what do you know for sure?
You know, I know for sure that philanthropy and CFAR funding will always be a really critical piece of the pie, right? I think something I really appreciate about being a development officer, CFAR officer in the US is that this field is so much more sophisticated in the US. I think a lot of other countries are still kind of growing and learning, and we get to work in this field that even in my day-to-day life, like they're like, what is, like some people know what a development officer is, but that you can have these whole kind of very robust careers strictly in philanthropy that can be, you know, that is continuing to grow, right? So I think it's just knowing that you're working in a field with high impact, it's intellectually stimulating, nice people is always a great comfort to me. I've worked in industries where that's not always the case, right? And that's not like the ethos necessarily. So yeah, I guess that won't change. I hope it doesn't change. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to learn a little bit more about your area and get some of your insights.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, you know, anytime. And thank you as well for sharing your insights too from your side.